Grab an earful of liberty.
What is it the gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of pens and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death!
Freedom! Never sounded so good.
Okay, folks, time to listen up. Here's a disclaimer for everybody to listen to and realize. I do shows here on the Survival Circle, specifically in the Tinker Shop. I have been known, and I will continue to give lessons on how to build tools and how to do some weapons. These lessons are not intended to encourage people to go out and build weapons and to act like the local Cuisinart. Many of these things can slice, dice, chop, pierce, and otherwise maim and harm people if used incorrectly. These are meant for educational purposes and for enlightenment. So, with that said, we'll go ahead and proceed to discuss things and to learn more. Thank you.
Take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
We'll be right back.
path has led you to the Tinker's Shop. I welcome you. Please come in, sit down, have a seat. We all must remember that we are the library for those who come after us, and we must share our knowledge with those who need it.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free, you can't take the sky from me. Take me out, who's black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea, you can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Well, good evening, my friends. Yes, it's the Tinker. Here we are. Again, on a Saturday night, 9 p.m. Central Time. And this is the Tinker's Shop here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. And like I said, here we are, 9 o'clock again. And today is the 11th of April of 2015. Yes, four more days till tax day. So, yeah, tonight I'm going to probably, what I was going to originally do was a single show for tonight. I'm going to probably end up splitting it into two shows to carry it on into next week. I'm going to be talking about arrows and those pointy things that go on the ends of arrows. But first off, I'm going to kind of get a little, shall we say, public service announcement here out of the way, or a heads up to everybody, because, I ran across this week. This was in the New Mother Earth News. It's the April-May of 2015 edition. Looks like it's going to be a good one this year. Yeah, it's got tips and techniques for water-wise gardening, spring growing guides, and, you know, all kinds of other stuff. But they usually do a little editorial in the front of that. So, I'm not going to read the whole darn thing because that would, you know, eat up a very good sized chunk of the show here. But I just figured I'd mention it for those who don't get Mother Earth News. So I kind of, you know, give you a heads up to maybe, you know, glance at it in the grocery store or something. And those of you who do have a subscription like I've had it, you know, see, I think I got number one kicking around here, and this is year 40 or something. So, anyhow, they had their little op-ed or news or editorial, whatever you want to call it here. They called it, headed it up with Seed Sharing Snafu. And did you know that in some states, informally sharing seeds with your fellow gardeners is illegal? It's hard to believe, but it's true. To ensure that seeds sold to farmers and gardeners are of good quality, every state has laws that require people who sell seeds to buy a permit and label their seeds with the variety name, germination percentage, presence of seed of weed seeds, name and address of supplier, and a lot more. Sounds okay, right? It supposedly does. And you've seen all that information on seed packets you buy. But in some states, seed labeling laws define sell to include giveaway, transport, or even possess. You love this. Possess with intent to give away or transport. That's right. You need a permit from the state to legally give away seeds. Minnesota's seed laws, for example, is so broad that it basically prohibits gardeners from sharing or giving away seeds unless they buy an annual permit, have the germination of each seed lot tested, and attach a detailed label to each seed packet. This law is enforced by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, which has recently told seed libraries that they can't distribute free seeds to gardeners unless they buy a permit and provide detailed labeling even though the libraries aren't selling the seeds. The penalty for violating this law, by the way, is a fine up to $7,500 per day. You know, Minnesota is definitely joining the ranks of the, and this is my own editorial on editorial. Minnesota is getting to the point where, we need to kick that thing out of the Midwest here and ship it to the East Coast, I think. Yeah, they're getting crazy enough there, they're getting to total nanny staters. Yeah, they've got their, Minneapolis and that area is, I won't even go there. Anyway, continue on here. The creation of seed libraries to facilitate seed sharing and preserve seed diversity has been spreading, with an estimated 300 libraries now operating nationally. Officials in several other states are now saying that the libraries can't give away or exchange seeds unless they first obtain a permit and comply with the numerous requirements of the seed labeling law. Needless to say, these actions have upset many gardeners who know the value of saving and sharing seeds that are highly adapted to their local conditions. Regulating seeds that are sold commercially is one thing, but applying such laws to seeds that are swapped or given away defies logic, history, and common sense. Neil Thapper, staff attorney with the Sustainable Economics Law Center, has reviewed the laws in more than 30 states so far, and he reports that about 30% of them specify that sharing seeds without a permit is illegal. Almost all the laws contain vague language that needs to be clarified to explicitly exempt non-commercial seed sharing activities, he says. So, anyway, like I said, I'm not going to read the whole thing here. I did about half of it. But anyhow, there's getting to be a national movement now going on with the American Seed Control officials. You know, they've been trying to, you know, shall we say, coordinate the state laws to get this stuff off the books, or to keep it off the books. Hardly know where to go with this stuff. But basically, say, for example, I would send out some of my pole bean seeds to people for them to try and grow. In Minnesota, I would be up to my neck in, state violation for sending out a few of my pole bean seeds. And so, yeah, this is definitely nanny state going totally bananas on us. Okay, so enough of that rant. I've probably wasted way more time than people are interested in listening to me complain about these bozos. So, now that I got that off my chest, welcome everybody again to the Tinker Shop. Hopefully you've refreshed your beverage for the evening here that you'll be working on, whether it's coffee, cocoa, a beer, or whatever. And hello to everyone who is listening in the podcast in the future, and just those who are just, you know, listening otherwise. So, well, like I said, time for me to get rolling on this. So if you're in the chat room, go ahead over to the left side and click on where it says Tinker's Shop. And that'll bring you to, you know, my page, where we use as a launch point. Those of you who aren't in the chat room and can't see the, you know, our menus to the left, go ahead out to www.arlinn-tower.com/tinkers_shop. And the tinker, as always, is capitalized. So, once you get out to my page there, you'll see the usual mess, my welcome to the Tinker Shop. And if you scroll down, as always, you'll see an entry there for today, for the 11th of April of 2015. And it'll say arrows. Well, this is, you know, kind of part two of my bows, arrows, and points thing. And we'll be obviously having a part three. Or we could say this is part number six of my Do Unto Others series. So go ahead and click on arrows. And that will bring you to a page that you'll see where it says that it's arrows and darts. And this page, this one's going to be a little bit different, but that's okay, because we're going to be adding to this in the coming week, or perhaps the coming weeks. So, definition time here to start with. Obviously, everybody, you know, if you were listening last week, you heard me, or not last week, the week before that, discussing about varying kinds of bows. And I did go ahead and talk to my brother-in-law, who, like I said, is a bowyer, and he gave me all kinds of good information, which I still have to, shall we say, consolidate down and get it added in so we can continue on discussing bows. But tonight we're going to talk about arrows and darts. So, definition, an arrow. An arrow is a shafted projectile that is shot with a bow. It predates recorded history and is common to, you know, most cultures. An arrow usually consists of a shaft with an arrowhead attached to the front end, with fletchings and a nock at the other. Today, most arrows that you can find are generally between 28 and 36 inches in length, with the, you know, the mean length being between 30 and 32 inches. Because, you know, most people, when they draw a bow, they get, you know, right around 30 inches. You know, 28 to 30, 32. So, you get a little space in there. Okay, a bolt or a quarrel. That is also, it's a projectile that's fired from a crossbow. It too consists of a headed shaft and can also have fletching and a nock. Of course, that's not absolutely necessary. A quarrel or a bolt is a specialized arrow meant for use with a crossbow. Okay, and a bolt is generally shorter than a normal arrow that's shot with a bow. And they'll have a length generally between 24 and 30 inches. Again, it depends on, you know, your size of your crossbow. A dart, again, it's, you know, kind of like, you know, a subcategory of a bolt or a quarrel. And actually, darts can be, you know, fired from, you know, little tiny crossbows. You know, a little hand bow wouldn't work real well, but also they can be used with like a blowgun. So, but it's, again, same principle behind a dart as with a quarrel as an arrow. It's kind of like, you know, smaller you go, the name changes. Okay, so down below this here, we've got a, you know, a little drawing or graphic here, and, you know, basically showing us, you know, the parts of an arrow. Obviously, over on the right side here, you see the arrowhead. And then you have the shaft, which is the main body. The fletching is over to the left side, and at the very end is the nock. Well, the shaft, you know, it's, this is the, you know, the primary structural element of an arrow, to which all the other components of the arrow are attached. Now, traditional arrow shafts are made from a lightweight wood, you know, or bamboo or reeds, whereas the modern shafts can be made from aluminum, carbon fiber, reinforced plastic, or, you know, a combination of other materials. And actually, there's still a lot of wooden arrows around as well. Now, the shaft can be composed of two different types of wood. If you use soft wood for the major portion of the arrow, that gives it a little bit more flexibility for, you know, for when you fire it. You know, it'll flex a little bit, but it, you know, won't snap on you. And, you know, it makes it a little bit more, well, it just allows the flex and, you know, get a little bit more oomph out of it. Whereas with hardwood, you know, they sometimes use it in a four section of the arrow, and to give a kind of a harder or stiffer base for your arrowhead to be attached. it's, you know, it's, it gives a more rigid structure for the, to mount the points to. But it's not absolutely necessary. It just means that if you have the hardwood there, it's less liable to split or, you know, damage the arrow when you hit your target with the arrowhead. So, now, going down here a little bit further, you know, obviously I've kind of skipped the arrowhead because that's where we're going to concentrate mostly on tonight. But, you know, I just kind of got to get the terms here out of the way. Okay, if we go down here to this another next section here about the fletching. Now, the fletching, you know, refers collectively to the fins or vanes on an arrow. And each one of the fletchings or the vanes are known as a fletch. Traditionally, the fletching consists of three matched half feathers attached near the back of an arrow or darts that are equally spaced around its circumference. And it's actually been known that some places will use like four or even six fletchings. You know, historically they've been used, but the most common number has been three. Of course, quarrels sometimes, or bolts, quite often will just use two, because that'll allow it to lay flat in your crossbow. Wow, you know, kind of probably have people kind of have to probably kind of look close at the screen here as we go, but yeah, it's you know, the stuff will be here for reference as well. So in this photo here, you can see the top arrow that's using, you know, natural feathers for the fletching, and those are you know, glued on one, whereas the bottom photo is done with a traditional style. Well, today, you know, with arrow making, you know, modern plastics are quite often used, you know, to replace feathers, you know, because they're a little bit more long-lasting. They're not as susceptible to water damage and whatnot. And, you know, traditionally, fletches were attached with glue and silk thread to your arrow shaft. But, you know, with modern glues, you know, the thread is no longer necessary, unless you're getting into you know, super fine historical detail. So, and now this next graphic down here, I know it looks kind of weird, but this is very definitely, you can see that, you know, there's kind of the left hand one, the line there kind of bows to the left, and the one on the right bows to the right. There's a reason behind this. Feather fletches normally will, well, I'll just read it here, then I'll go ahead and kind of re-explain it a little bit more. Feather fletches impart a natural spin on an arrow due to the rough and smooth sides of a feather and the natural curve of the feather. And that's determined by which wing the feathers came from. Vanes need to be placed at a slight angle to create the same effect, but all are there to impart stability to the projectile to ensure that the projectile does not wobble or tumble during flight. Okay, so now that I've got that read, now I'll try and explain it a little bit. On a bird that you're going to get the feathers from if you use natural feathers to fletch your arrows, the feathers on the right wing, for example, you know, curve downwards in a particular fashion, whereas on the other wing, the left one, they curve down in the other direction. So what you want to do is use feathers from the same wing on an arrow. You know, obviously if it's long feathers that you get, obviously you can separate the feather into, like, you know, three portions and, you know, split it and, you know, and cut it to length and glue it on that way. But if you mix up and say the feathers are a bit shorter and you're only able to make one fletch from each feather, if you get two feathers from one wing and one from the other, you can end up with it not being in the same direction, obviously. And so as a result, you won't get the beneficial effect. If the feathers are all oriented in the same direction, you know, with the natural curve to them, when you fire that arrow, it's going to spin on its axis as it's traveling downrange. That spinning has the same effect that rifling does in a rifle. In a rifle, it spins that bullet and stabilizes it so it keeps on going straight ahead and doesn't, you know, tumble and fall around and not be able to hit your target. Same thing goes for arrows. If that arrow is spinning as it goes, it basically, well, it's like it's drilling its way through the air. And it actually, you know, causes it to be a bit more accurate. Also on this picture, I've got it in here. You can see a couple, you know, lines across each one. And that's basically just to symbolize the nock on the end of your arrow. What you want to have is two of the, that it's basically parallel to, you know, two of the feathers. And the third one is more or less your guide feather that you're using. That way, that way you have, you know, two of the feathers there just to, you know, for standardization, basically. Because you don't want to be just having one single feather hitting your bow going out. Could tear the feather off. If they're out to the sides, allows it to run a little bit more smoothly. Okay, so next we'll go ahead and move on to the nock. Now the nock is the part that's way back at the far end of the bow, or at the far end of the arrow from your point, and that's where your string fits into. And so, yes, again, I'll go ahead and read it and I'll kind of talk about it some more. Okay, the nock is the notch in the rearmost end of an arrow. It serves to keep the arrow in place on the string as the bow is being drawn. Strings may be, or nocks may be simple slots cut into the back of the arrow, or they can be separate pieces made from wood, plastic, or horn that are then attached to the end of the arrow. Modern nocks and traditional Turkish nocks are often constructed so as to curve around the string or even pinch it slightly so that the arrow is unlikely to slip off. In English, it is common to say knock a bow when one readies a shot. And this is, it's probably, a thing about arrows that most people don't notice. But the thing is, once you're getting ready to shoot, you know, you get your arrow, you know, latched onto your string, you don't have to hang onto it quite as tight. You can hold it, you know, with your support hand, you know, hold the arrow up there, and you still can get your drawing hand away momentarily, and you don't lose it. And that's what that, you know, where it pinches on the string slightly, that's a good thing. You know, it'll release quite easily. It doesn't take that much pressure, you know, to clip it on there or to, you know, get it to release. So it's a good thing. You know, it's, again, with the grandkids here, when I first was working with them in shooting here on the homestead, they were like, "Grandpa, these arrows are, yeah, it's hard. Is it too small?" It's like, no, it's just how it's supposed to be. You know, that way you don't drop the darn thing. So they got used to it. And so that's how it does it. And here's a nice little story about this, too, that you might get kind of a kick out of. In Arab archery, you know, since we are putting up with those types these days, you know, might as well know a little bit of their history as well. In Arab archery, there was a description of the use of a nockless arrow. In shooting at their enemies, either the Turks or the Persians, you know, in history, it was seen that the enemies would often pick up expended arrows and then shoot them back at the Arabs. So, the Arabs being, you know, fairly bright boys, they developed nockless arrows, which would be, you know, useless to their foes. The bowstring itself would have a small ring, tied onto the string, or, like a little cup type thing, at the proper point where the knock would normally be placed. The end of the arrow, rather than being slit in the back or cut for making a knock, would be instead sharpened, like an arrowhead, or like a field point or whatever. But it'd be sharp, so there'd be no wear to put the string on. And then where it would normally be placed, the end of the arrow, rather than being slit, was sharpened, and then the rear end of this arrow would be slipped into this ring, and then when you draw and released as usual, then the enemy could collect all the arrows they wanted to on the field, but they would definitely be useless to them in shooting, because if they're looking for knocks on arrows and all they have is a point, it's like ain't gonna work. So yes, and a piece of advice for using this sort of thing in battle was to have several rings tied onto the bowstring in case one broke. Because again, what were they making the rings out of? Were they made out of metal? Now, if they're made out of metal, it wouldn't be that bad. But that still could, if you lashed a ring to your bowstring, those threads could break. If it was made out of wood, again, the wood could break. So that's kind of it'd make for kind of an iffy situation. So, okay, well, it looks like we're here probably at about, my guess is at about the 31-32 minute point here. And I think I should probably stop here and get myself a little something to drink. So I'm going to go ahead and put a piece of music in here. And then after that's over, we'll come back and start talking about arrowheads and the different kinds. So, enjoy.
I was standing by the window in my boxer shorts on a stormy night, blindsided from out of nowhere. You
was a song called "I Have a Good Day Now and Then." His name was Paul Thorne. So it just kind of seemed like one to put in here at that point. So, and I was wrong. After I switched over and looked at the music here, I went, "Oh, gee, it wasn't 32 minutes. We were at 34 already." So here we are. Our evening is flying along for us. So, good thing I'd mentioned earlier that we'll probably be going ahead and splitting things. But that's okay. Because like I said, had to get that little bit off here at the beginning here of the show. To kind of give people a heads up to be watching out for our illustrious rulers who want to, nanny state us to death. So, and yes. And if someone's coming in late, this is the Tinker's Shop. You're on the Survival Circle. And we're talking arrowheads tonight. So, now, to continue on. Arrowheads. Now, this is, kind of the point of the whole thing. Pun is intended there. And, okay, arrowheads can be attached to the shaft with either a cap, a socketed tang, or inserted into a split in the shaft. And this is held by a process called hafting. Now, let's see here. Well, I've got some pictures here, but I'll just kind of, talk about them just a little bit before I continue on. Now, a cap. Obviously, a cap is something that goes over something else. And some of the things we're going to talk about a little bit further down the page, you have things like bodkins, which is an old arrow type. You also have like broadheads or just hunting points. And a cap is basically an extension on the arrowhead that comes back and it looks almost like a tube. And it doesn't necessarily have to be welded, but it's where part of the arrow is formed. You have your pointed section. And then behind that you have what looks almost like a tube where the metal is flat and it curled around. And so that, that's what a cap is. A socketed tang. That is where part of the arrowhead comes back and it's either as a shaft, which is just put into a hole that's drilled into the end of the arrow. And then that socket or the socketed tang slips into that hole. And again, it's fastened in, glued in, or fixed somehow. Also, a socketed tang can be a threaded end. Like a lot of the modern arrowheads, they can be taken off the shaft. If you can spin it off, and it's a little fine thread on there, which holds it in place. Or an arrowhead can be inserted into a split shaft. Just like with the nock, they can saw in a groove in the end of the arrow, the shaft to where the string can set into it. You can also take a flatter arrowhead. You can take and slice the arrow back, either splitting it or sawing a notch in there. So that's where it's inserted. Again, just kind of giving a little bit of definition here before we continue on. Okay, so the top picture here with the arrowhead that's on a blue background, this is a broadhead type that is a cap. And like I have here, points are attached with caps, or points that are attached with caps are simply slid snugly over the end of the shaft, or they can be held on with glue. Now that glue could be almost any kind. These days it could be hot glue, it could be hide glue or whatever. A lot of times in the past they would do a hide glue, or they might even use pitch, which is basically the sap from a resin, which would be a sap from a tree. And a pitch could be like a tarry type thing. Again, that would hold it in place on the shaft. I didn't have a picture here showing a good example of a socketed tang, but But like I said, you know, some of these pictures down further, you might be able to see a little bit in there what it looks like. And the third type is where the arrowhead is inserted into a split in the shaft. And that's the next picture down. And that's not me. That's someone else. But this is a picture where someone had built some broadheads out of lightweight sheet metal, where he actually cut it out with the shears and then cut the arrow shaft to insert it in. This is just kind of showing you how that could fit. Now, like I said, split shaft construction involves splitting the arrow shaft lengthwise, inserting the arrowhead, and then securing it. You can either use a ferrule, or you can use sinew or wire. And, you know, the photo above shows, you know, a plate broadhead, you know, prior to the hafting process. So, you know, it's, you know, once you have it in place like that, again, you can use sinew where you would literally start it, you know, wet it and hold it in place and leave yourself about an inch or so, you know, up against the shaft. Then you just start turning it and wrapping it really tight. And if you're using sinew, you do it while it's wet, so it would stretch as you're putting it on. You wrap it when you get to the far end. You know, if you're doing just one layer, just tie it off then, or, you know, you do, you know, two or three layers, however much you want to make sure that is held in there. You'd tie it off, you'd let it dry, and as the sinew dries, it'll shrink up. It'll, you know, bind the whole thing together really tight. Again, a person could use glue or pitch, you know, to hold it as well. Or if you're really worried about strength, again, you know, you could use fine wire. So that's kind of that portion. So, okay. So that's kind of, well, like I said, we're kind of moving along here, but again, you know, we're going to definitely run out of time tonight here, because I'm, you know, 46 and a half minutes so far. So, here we go. You know, some various types of arrowheads. You know, kind of do them alphabetically here, and I'll kind of, you know, talk about them as well as we go. So let me grab my notes. Okay, well, got my notes here now. So now I can talk intelligently on this stuff here. So, our first one. Yeah, this first group in here, now, was it four different arrowheads we got here? And these are, you know, four examples of bodkins. Now, this first one here is just, you know, basically a drawing of one, so we can, again, see it. You know, obviously on a bodkin you have a relatively sharp point. It flares out somewhat, narrows back down to a cap. And definition-wise here, okay. Now, their bodkins are, you know, are short, rigid points, and they have a, you know, small cross section to them. Generally, in the past, they were made of unhardened iron, and, you know, they've been, you know, for, you know, used for a better or longer flight. And, you know, these were, you know, early arrowheads that, you know, they were, you know, not real easy to make, but, you know, you could kind of standardize on them. And, you know, sometimes people in the past have suggested that the bodkin, you know, came into its, you know, its own as a means of penetrating armor. But that's not necessarily true. You know, it's because, oh, how to put it? Well, it's probably was designed as a, you know, as a cheaper and simpler alternative to the broadhead arrow. But again, you know, we're going to show you some stuff next week with you're going to see it's actually easier in some ways to make a broadhead. Let's see here. They've done some testing on these, and they did find that a direct hit from a hard steel bodkin penetrated Damascus chain armor or chain mail. But, however, you know, archery wasn't effective against plate armor. Because that was, you know, that came into into vogue probably by, you know, the late 14th century. You know, this is, you know, we're talking here hand-drawn bows now. With a crossbow actually had a little bit better chance of punching holes through armor because probably the average longbow shot with an arrow, which would be, again, like I said, you know, a wooden shaft, you know, it didn't have that much, how would you call it? Well, basically foot-pounds of energy. You know, the longbow, most bows probably are probably in the 60-pound range, you know, for the average person. Of course, there are, you know, people who I've met already that they'll pull a 120-pound bow by hand. You know, that's getting up there. But a crossbow, again, I'll be showing you a design probably in 2 weeks, maybe three, of a modern crossbow that one can make out of PVC pipe, which starts at about 120 pounds draw weight. And if a person would use a spring steel prod, which is what the bow is called on a crossbow, you can easily get those up into, you know, probably the 200 to 300 pound range without too much problem. So that's a heck of a lot of draw, and you'd have to use probably a crank to, you know, get that string pulled back. But when you start getting up into crossbows of that weight, then you're using, you know, steel or iron quarrels. So that, you know, again, you have a lot more weight there, which is a lot more able to, shall we say, punch through things. So, with that said, I better get back on track here because I'm going to run out of time here and we won't get this whole section done tonight. So, these four, and actually there's three photos here. You know, it's you have a bodkin that's, you know, basically done in the round where the cap or the collar is made. It's hammered out and fold and rolled around, and then the shaft itself is just pretty well circular, yet where it's, you know, hammered out to a point. Looks almost like a nail. The next one down, it's a bodkin that's squared off. Again, the cap or the sleeve that's slid over the arrow is made, and then the rod is hammered square. Again, that'll chisel its way on into something. And then the third one down here, and you're going to note here, I've got some stuff here with them kind of color coding things. The ones here that have the green background are ones that are a cap type of arrowhead. And this is a pyramidal shaped bodkin point. And again, it's got a little bit longer a collar or cap on it. And again, the point is a lot longer and skinnier. And that puppy will definitely go through, so we should say, lightweight chainmail, or maybe even level 1 and possibly level 2 armor that's not plates. You know, stuff that's Kevlar or whatever. It'll go right through it. So our next type here. This is a couple, I got two examples of a blunt, which is, another type of head for an arrow. And actually this first blunt here, you can see, you know, some threads on it, and that's, like I was talking about, where it's a socketed, give you the exact wording on it here. A socketed tang. Yeah, I'm trying to use the actual proper terms here, so that's what you'd call, like, for a socketed tang. It would go on to a modern arrowhead, onto a modern shaft, where it has like a little, it's threaded inside, so you just crank the thing on. The other blunt here, that's one that slips over the end of an arrow. Now, these two here are actually made out of hard rubber, but again, in the past, some blunts would be made out of like a chunk of antler, or even made out of metal, or even could be made out of wood. These are mainly designed for use on small game, like rabbits or birds or whatever. Because if you'd hit, say you'd hit a bird with a with a broadhead arrow. You know, if you would hit it, you would definitely chop it all to bits. So, you know, for small game, you don't want to be accidentally shooting it in the guts. And because if you do that, you've ruined your meat. So that was the idea of a blunt. You'd shoot your small game with that, and it could either kill it outright or stun it long enough for you to be able to get up there and get a hold of it and dispatch it. So, okay, so next category here. We're going to kind of go down through the broadheads here because, that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about here, and I've only got about 6 or 7 minutes left here. So, first one here, broadhead. It's a fixed blade. This is what you commonly see a lot of for deer hunting. This is just, again, basically looks almost like a flat arrow or a flat arrowhead, sort of like a broadhead. And again, since they're yellow, these are all ones that are, modern ones that screw into the shaft. But a fixed blade one just had two blades or two edges to it. Next one down is one that's probably what most people think of when you're thinking of an arrowhead for deer hunting. This is a triple-bladed or a tri-bladed one. It's found and used a lot. Again, all three of those edges are sharpened, razor sharp, sharp point on it, and go right on in. Okay, so now, this next one down here. This is a broadhead, and this is what's called a large Saxon design. And this is one that's actually a reproduction of a, and again, it's got a green background, so that's showing us that this is a capped arrowhead. This would be fitted on a shaft, either glued or lashed into place. Okay, so now we're getting down here into the little bit more of the arrow points that mean business. This next one here is it's a modern broadhead, and again, it has more or less a bullet type shape with two wings on it that are razor sharp, that are meant to basically you shoot it into an animal and it'll cut its wing in. And again, the broadheads are meant to when they're shot into your target, it's meant to kill it, pure and simple. And these, by the way, that one, it's a fixed one. The blades don't move. Now, if we go down here a little bit further, the next one is it's a modern broadhead deer point. And it's basically two views of the same one. On the right-hand side of it is where the arms are, swung up and into place. That's be where you'd be shooting it. And on the left-hand side of the photo, that's where the arms have extended down. Once it gets shot into its target, like for deer hunting, those wings will expand down and out. And so they just basically cut their way in. And it's a little bit harder for you to get it out of the deer. Basically, really, in a lot of cases, what you end up doing is pushing it through. And then this last one down here, this is another one that's where the wings will swing down. And this is really basically what you could basically call, it's a war point. This would be, it's also used for deer hunting, but, when that goes in, it's not going to fall. So, okay. So, last few views here. This next one is a broadhead that's made out of plate steel, where it's cut out. I'm actually going to show you pictures of the process of making one of those this next week. And again, this is put into a split shaft where basically saw the end of the shaft and slip this into place. You glue it, and then you wrap it and seal it on. And then the last two pictures here are field points. Again, yellow background. That's one where you screw it into the arrow. And at the very bottom, got some more field points here. And this is ones that are a cap type, which would go on to the end of a, like a wooden shaft. Okay, so where are we at here now? Oh, boy. Yes. Oh, boy, Emma. I'm at almost 58 minutes, so I think perhaps I should probably jump off real quick at this point, close out with a little bit of music, and then next week we're going to come back, and I'm going to talk to you about how to make your own bodkins and how to make your own broad arrow points. And those broad arrow points, I'm going to show both how to make them out of plate steel and how to use, believe it or not, teaspoons and tablespoons to do it. So, again, thank you much for joining me here in the Tinker Shop for Saturday, the 11th of April of 2015. Take care, God bless, and have a very good week. Bye-bye.
With a need to bleed you with the light goes green. Best believe I'm in the zone to be. From a yin to my yang disease. Put a grin on my skin when you come to me. Cause I'll win, I'm a one of a kind. And I'll bring death to the place you're about to be. Another river of blood running under my feet. Boys in the fire living long ago. Stand next to me, you'll never stand alone. I'm last to leave, but the first to go. Lord, make me dead before you make me whole. I feel the fear of the devil inside of the enemy faces in my sight. Aim with a hand, shoot with a mind, kill with a heart like Arctic ice. The blood spilled on the floor, and if another one stands, I'll kill some more. Bullet in the breach and the fire in me, like a cigarette thrown to gasoline. If death don't bring you fear, I swear you'll fear these marching feet. Come to the nightmare, come to me. Deep down in the dark where the devil will be. In the mall where the jaws and the razor teeth. Where the brimstone burns and the angel weeps. Call to the gods of across your path, and my silhouette hangs like a body wrap. Hope is a moment now long past. The shadow of death is the one I cast. I am a soldier and I'm marching on. I am a warrior and this is my song. My eyes are steel and my gaze is long. I am a warrior and this is my song.
We're not just going to shoot the bastard. We're going to cut out their living guts and use them to grease the treads of our tanks. We're going to murder those lousy bastards by the bushel.
Now I've been bleeding, I mean to inflict the grief, and the least of me is still out of your reach. The killer machine's gonna do the deed until the river runs dry and the last breath leaves. Stand in the air with a